And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today's the third day of March, 62nd day of the year. 303 days remain till the year is over with. On this day in 473, Gundobad, nephew of Ricimer, nominates Glacerius as emperor of the Western Roman Empire. That was the original Roman Empire. The Eastern Roman Empire became Byzantium. 724, Empress Gunzo abdicates the throne in favor of her nephew, Shomu, who becomes emperor of Japan. 1575, Mughal Emperor Akbar defeats Sultan of Bengal, Daud Khan Karani's army at the Battle of Tukaroi. 1585, the Olympic Theater, designed by Andrea Palladio, is inaugurated in Vicenza. 1776, American Revolutionary War. First amphibious landing of the U.S. Marine Corps begins the Battle of Nassau. 1779, American Revolutionary War. Continental Army is routed at the Battle of Briar Creek near Savannah, Georgia. 1799, the Russo-Ottoman siege of Corfu ends with the surrender of the French garrison. 1820, the U.S. Congress passes the Missouri Compromise. 1845, Florida is admitted as the 27th U.S. state. 1849, the territory of Minnesota is created. On this date in 1857, the Second Opium War began. France and the U.K. declare war on China. 1859, the two-day Great Slave Auction, the largest such auction in U.S. history, concludes. 1861, Alexander II of Russia signs the Emancipation Manifesto, freeing the serfs. 1873, censorship in the U.S. Congress enacts the Comstock Law, making it illegal to send any obscene literature and article of immoral use through the mail. Now, members of Congress can do it online, but can't do it in the mail. 1875, the first ever organized indoor game of ice hockey is played in Montreal, Canada, Quebec, as recorded in the Montreal Gazette. 1878, the Russo-Turkish War ends with Bulgaria regaining its independence from the Ottoman Empire, according to the Treaty of San Stefano. 1891, Shoshone National Forest is established as the first national forest in the U.S. and in the world. 1910, Rockefeller Foundation. John D. Rockefeller Jr. announces his retirement from managing his businesses so he can devote all his time to philanthropy. Instead of making it, he's going to be giving it away. 1913, thousands of women march in a women's suffrage procession in Washington, D.C. 1918, Russia signs the Treaty of Brest-Litovsk, agreeing to withdraw from World War I and ceding Russian control of the Baltic states. Conceding German control, I can't talk, the Baltic states, Belarus and Ukraine. It also conceded Turkish control of Ardakan, Kars, and Batumi. 1924, the 407-year-old Islamic Caliphate is abolished when Caliph Abdulmasid II of the Ottoman Caliphate is deposed. The last remnant of the old regime gives way to the reformed Turkey of Kemal Ataturk. 1924, the Free State of Fiume is annexed by the Kingdom of Italy. 1931, the U.S. adopts the Star Spangled Banner as its national anthem. In 1938, oil is discovered in Saudi Arabia. 1939, in Bombay, Mohandas Gandhi begins a hunger strike in protest at the autocratic rule of the British India. 1940, five people are killed in an arson attack on the offices of the communist newspaper Flammen in Luleå in Sweden. 1942, World War II, 10 Japanese warplanes raid Broome, Western Australia. Kills more than 100 people. And it showed nobody was safe from an attack by the Japanese. London. 173 people were killed in a crush while trying to enter an air raid shelter in Bethnal Green Tube Station. 1944, the Order of Nakhimov and the Order of Ushakov were instituted in USSR as the highest naval awards. 1944, a freight train carrying stowaway passengers stalls in a tunnel shortly after departing from Balvano, Basilicata, Italy, just after midnight. 517 of them die from carbon monoxide poisoning. 1945, World War II, American and Filipino troops recapture Manila. Also on this date, 1945, World War II, the RAF accidentally bombs the Buitenzorgt area of The Hague, Netherlands, killing 511 people. 1951, Jackie Brinston with Ike Turner and his band record Rockets 88, often cited as the first rock and roll record at Sam Phillips Recording Studio in Memphis, Tennessee. 1953, a de Havilland Comet with the Canadian Pacific Airlines crashes in Karachi, Pakistan, kills 11. 1958, Nouri al-Said becomes Prime Minister of Iraq for the eighth time. 1969, Apollo program, NASA launches Apollo 9 to test the lunar module. 1972, Mohawk Airlines Flight 405 crashes as a result of a control malfunction and insufficient training of the crew in emergency procedures. 1974, Turkish Airlines Flight 981 crashes in Ermanonville near Paris, kills all 346 on board. 1980, the USS Nautilus is decommissioned and stricken from the Naval Vessel Register. 1985, Arthur Scargill declares that the National Union of Mine Workers National Executive voted to end the longest-running industrial dispute in Great Britain without any peace deal over pit closures. 1985, a magnitude 8.3 earthquake strikes the Valparaiso region of Chile, kills 177 and leaves nearly a million people homeless. 1986, the Australia Act of 1986 commences, causing Australia to become fully independent from the UK. 1991, an amateur video captures the beating of Rodney King by LA police officers. 1991, United Airlines Flight 585 crashes on its final approach to Colorado Springs. 2005, James Rusko murders four Royal Canadian Mounted Police constables during a drug bust on his property in Rochefort Bridge, Alberta, and then he commits suicide. This is the deadliest peacetime incident for the RCMP since 1885 and the Northwest Rebellion. 2005, Steve Fossett becomes the first person to fly an airplane nonstop around the world solo without refueling. 2005, Margaret Wilson is elected Speaker of the New Zealand House of Representatives. Begins a period lasting till August 23, 2006, where all the highest political offices, including that of Elizabeth II as the head of state, are occupied by women, making New Zealand the first country for this to occur. 2013, a bomb blast in Karachi, Pakistan, kills at least 45 and injures 180 others in a predominantly Shia Muslim area. 2017, the Nintendo Switch releases worldwide. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays and observances. Christian Feast Day. Anselm, Duke of Friuli. Ortheilius, Kunigunda of Luxembourg. Catherine Drexel. John and Charles Wesley in the Episcopal Church in the U.S. Marinus and Asterius of Caesarea. Winwellow. In a Matsuri, or Girls' Day in Japan, Liberation and Freedom Day in Charlottesville, Virginia, Liberation Day in Bulgaria, Martyrs' Day in Mawali, Mother's Day in Georgia, Sportsman's Day in Egypt, Teacher's Day in Lebanon, World Hearing Day, and World Wildlife Day. Alrighty. Well, now that's interesting. Okay, ba-ba-boom, ba-ba-doo. The year 78, the origin of the Saka era in India. 468, Saint Simplicius elected to succeed Catholic Pope Hilarius. 493, Ostrogiton King Theodoric the Great beats Odoacer. 1284, the statue of Rhuddlan incorporated the Principality of Wales into England. 1409, Austrian Civil War ends. 1431, Bishop Gabriel Condulmer elected Pope Eugene the Fourth. 1627, Dutch privateer Piet Hein attacks and conquers 22 Portuguese ships in the Bay of Salvador in Brazil. He was a Dutch admiral as well as a privateer. 1634, the first tavern in Boston opens up. It's opened by Samuel Cole. 1638, Duke Bernard of Saxe-Weimar occupies Rheinfelden. 1776, American Commodore Essex Hopkins occupies Nassau, Bahamas. 1789, the first whale was harpooned in the Pacific Ocean by the English ship Amelia off the coast of South Africa. 1791, the first U.S. Internal Revenue Act, taxing distilled spirits and carriages. 1791, Congress establishes the U.S. Mint. 1794, Richard Allen founded the African Methodist Episcopal Church. 1801, the first U.S. Jewish governor, David Emanuel, takes office in Georgia. 1803, the first impeachment trial of a U.S. federal judge, John Pickering, begins. 1803, Colegio Militar is founded in Portugal by Colonel Teixeira Rebelo. 1805, Louisiana-Missouri Territory forms. 1812, U.S. passes the first foreign aid bill, aids Venezuela earthquake victims. 1813, Office of the Surgeon General of the U.S. Army is formed. 1815, U.S. declares war on Algiers for taking U.S. prisoners and demanding tribute. 1817, Mississippi Territory is divided into Alabama Territory and the Mississippi Territory. 1835, Congress authorizes a U.S. mint at New Orleans, Louisiana. Now, 1837, Congress authorizes U.S. Supreme Court membership to be increased from 7 to 9. Also in 1837, President Andrew Jackson and Congress recognized the Republic of Texas. 1838, the rebellion at Pelee Island in Ontario, Canada. 1842, first U.S. child labor law regulating working hours is passed in Massachusetts. 1843, Congress appropriates $30,000, which is a good sum of money in those days, to test the practicability of establishing a system of electromagnetic telegraphs by the U.S. 1845, for the very first time, the U.S. Senate overrides a presidential veto. Had to do with President Tyler. 1845, U.S. Congress authorizes ocean mail contracts for foreign mail delivery. 1847, U.S. Post Office Department on this date is authorized to issue postage stamps. 1848, American education reformer Horace Mann, also known as the father of American education, joins the U.S. Senate representing Massachusetts. 1849, the Gold Coinage Act authorizes $20 double eagle gold coins and the $1 gold Liberty coin in the U.S. 1849, the U.S. Home Department, later renamed the Department of the Interior, established by Congress. 1851, Congress authorizes the smallest U.S. silver coin, the 3-cent piece. 1853, the Transcontinental Railway survey is authorized by Congress. 1853, the U.S. Assay Office in New York City is authorized. My favorite one happened in 1855 when Congress approves $30,000 to test camels for military use. The Secretary of Defense at the time was a man named Jefferson Davis. And they brought in a bunch of camels and scared the crap out of the Indians. 1855, Congress authorizes registered mail. 1862, Union forces under General Pope lay siege to New Madrid, Missouri. 1863, the first U.S. wartime military conscription bill is enacted, the draft. Also in 63, Abraham Lincoln approves the charter for the National Academy of Sciences. 1863, on this date, Congress also authorized the U.S. Mint to be established in Carson City, Nevada. Also in 63, federal ironclad ships bombard Fort McAllister in Georgia. 1863, free city delivery replaces zone postage. 449 letter carriers are hired. Also in 63, gold certificates, folding money, authorized by the U.S. Congress. 63, the Idaho Territory is formed. 1865, U.S. Bureau of Refugees, Freedmen, and Abandoned Lands, established by Abraham Lincoln to help destitute free blacks. 1865, opening of the Hong Kong and Shanghai Banking Corporation, founding member of the HSBC Banking Group. 1869, University of South Carolina opens up to all races. 1871, U.S. Congress changes Indian tribe status from independent to dependent. Also in 71, Congress establishes the civil service system. 73, U.S. Congress authorizes the federal departmental postage stamps. And in 73, Congress and other government retroactively raise their own salaries. 1875, Congress authorizes the 20-cent coin. It only lasted 3 years. It was not popular. 1877, Rutherford B. Hayes takes the oath of office privately as the official inauguration day falls on a Sunday. And, of course, he didn't want to get up on Sunday. 1879, the first female lawyer is heard by the U.S. Supreme Court. Her name was Belva Ann Bennett Lockwood. 1879, the U.S. Geological Survey Director is authorized in the Department of Interior. 1882, the New York Steam Corporation begins distributing steam to Manhattan buildings. Underneath the streets of Manhattan are hundreds of miles of steam tunnels that used to be used to give heat to the buildings in Manhattan. 1883, Congress authorizes the first steel vessels in the U.S. Navy. The 1885, the first U.S. state, California, establishes a permanent forest commission. 1885, American Telephone and Telegraph incorporates. 1885, Congress passes the Indian Appropriations Act, making the Indians wards of the federal government. 1885, the post office offers special delivery for first-class mail. 1887, the American Protective Association forms. It's an anti-Catholic organization in Clinton, Iowa. 1889, on this date, President Harrison announced the government would open 1.9 million acres of Indian Territory for settlement at precisely 12 noon on April 22nd. If you got to it and you did whatever was required under the statute, that land was yours, free for nothing. 1891, Congress creates the Courts of Appeal. Also in 91, U.S. Congress creates the Office of Superintendent of Immigration in the Treasury Department. 1892, the first cattle tuberculosis test in the U.S. was made in Villanova, Pennsylvania. 1893, the Colombian Isabella Silver Quarter is authorized. If you got one of those, you can retire. 1893, Congress authorizes the first federal road agency in the Department of Agriculture. 1899, Congress authorizes the Lafayette Silver Dollar. 1899, George Dewey becomes the first person in the U.S. to hold the rank of admiral in the Navy. 1901, Congress creates the National Bureau of Standards in the Department of Commerce. 1903, North Carolina becomes the first state requiring registration of nurses. 1904, German Emperor and the King of Prussia, Wilhelm II of Germany, becomes the first person to make a sound recording of a political document. He used Thomas Edison's cylinder recording machine. 1905, Tsar Nicholas II of Russia agrees to summon a consultative assembly and concedes at some other points, including an edict of religious toleration, relief for Jews, and the cancellation of certain debts. 1911, the first U.S. federal cemetery that has both Union and Confederate graves opens up in Missouri. 1917, Congress passes the first excess profits tax on corporations. 1917, the German Foreign Secretary Arthur Zimmermann publicly admits the Zimmermann telegram is real, generates support for the U.S. declaration of war on Germany in April. Well, on that note, I think we've come to the end of our history segment for today. You know, we've been talking about a lot of strange things. We've been talking about time travel. The what's especially interesting when you get into this particular field of discussion is how many very well-known names pop up, such as Einstein. He believed time travel was possible. In fact, he's supposed to burn some manuscripts that laid out a way to do it. Now, of course, he never said that. Others said it about him. Well, now that's interesting. My system has froze. That's annoying. Let's try it one more time. You know, quite often, you know, we have some of the most advanced technology anyone has ever seen. Things we use on a daily basis would absolutely have astounded even our grandparents. And the problem is, when it works, it's absolutely unbelievable. But when it doesn't work, and we're dependent on it, that certainly causes some interesting issues. Now, it seems to me that it, when you get right down to it, so much of what we deal with would be considered absolutely miraculous. And of course, we're not the agrarian state that this country was even 50 years ago. The fascinating thing is, so much support for concepts such as this actually come from Eastern cultures that we that our ancestors have looked down their nose at as primitive. 1954, in the wake of violent protests in Japan, which was just emerging from the proconsulship of General MacArthur, Japanese authorities believed the riots were being instigated by foreign agitators and mandated the passports of foreign visitors to the country at that time be scrutinized for any irregularities, such as telltale signs of forgery by terrorist or anti-government forces. And they came across a guest at a Tokyo hotel whose papers seemed to be in perfect order. Just one slight problem. The government issuing the passport didn't exist. Now, the document showed no signs of being tampered with. Barry's photograph was clear, as were the fingerprints. But the Japanese officials were at loss to find the Republic of Tored anywhere in their atlases. Despite the Barry's strident protest, his country occupied most of the Sahara Desert, stretching from Mauritania on the west to the Sudan on the east. Now, certainly the man had come to Japan on a, what they called a shadowy mission to purchase weapons to aid in emancipating all Arab countries from foreign oppression. According to reports, the nameless Toredian summoned a press conference to make his case, and the press corps tried in vain to find his country, even after entreaties to the United Nations and Arab League. He was committed to a Japanese psychiatric hospital where he presumably remains to this day. Now, granted, the entire event could have been a hoax, an effort by some Saharan nationalists to establish their own country and deceiving customs officials, and certainly a similar situation could have occurred only a few years ago when the Puerto Rican Independence Party started issuing its own Republic of Puerto Rico passports for those who wanted to renounce their U.S. citizenship. According to the party sources, the passports issued by this non-existent republic were accepted by customs officials in a number of foreign countries. Nonetheless, could some strange phenomenon have deposited a citizen of a major North African country from another dimension into our own world? Now, something similar had occurred a century before and thousands of miles away. 1850, man was found stumbling in a daze down the cobbled streets of a German village. When authorities brought him in for questioning, he stated his name was Josef Voren, a citizen of Laxaria and Sakria. German officials tore their hair trying to find these places, but they couldn't. Nobody knows what eventually happened to him. The 1970s. A renowned Spanish UFO researcher named Antonio Ribera looked into the possible intrusion of a non-existent world into our own. Rather than involving a republic with dark designs on its own world or this one, it concerned a small archipelago in the Pacific Ocean. Now, the coordinates couldn't have been more specific. 47 degrees, 9 seconds south, 108 degrees, 15 seconds west. And if the information was correct, somewhere in the immensity of the Pacific was a small group of islands nobody could find, but whose government was busy issuing postage stamps. It all started when Antonio Ribera received a call from a fellow researcher, an enthusiast of Antarctica and all of its outlying islands, asking him if he had ever heard of an archipelago known as the Hesperides Island. Now, his friend died shortly after raising that particular question. His heirs provided the ufologist with all their father's notes and information regarding Hesperides. So Ribera momentarily put aside his UFO investigation to chase after this improbable archipelago located at the coordinates mentioned before. In order to spare the listener a trip to the atlas, you can be assured a scan of a number of atlases show nothing except deep blue sea at the coordinates in question. Nearest land masses are Easter Island and Juan Fernandez Island. But among the papers given to Ribera was a curious booklet entitled A Study of the Hesperides Island, written in English by a man named John Callender and published in Great Britain in 1962. Now, this 20-page booklet included some interesting maps with geographic features identified in Spanish and French, along with some photographs of the remote islands. And the booklet's prologue suggested the islands are unknown to the point that they were no longer depicted on the vast majority of maps and cartographical works. Unlike an island depicted on a Charles Pirate treasure map, we do have some hard facts about the Hesperides. The archipelago consists of the Great Hesperides, Lake Island, and the islet of Rap, followed by five atolls covering a total area of about 100 square kilometers. And the geographic features on the larger islands are all very well marked. Mount Franklin, the Merced River, and a large lake at the center of Lake Island in a mixture of English, Spanish, and Polynesian names. Their location actually makes them sort of an antipodean paradise, watered by brief rain showers and basking in a temperate climate. Vegetation is characteristic of the Polynesian islands, and its volcanic geology reveals the presence of bauxite, rhyolite, trachyte, and other minerals. According to the papers inherited by Ribera, the islands were discovered in 1850 by a Scottish whaler named McNall, and he claimed it as his personal property. Even more intriguing was a memorandum to the Spanish Naval Command stating the archipelago had been purchased by a Madrid-based syndicate. Well, at this particular point in time, we begin to fall down the proverbial rabbit hole that leads us to places like the country of Torrid. Apparently, Madrid-based syndicate had also rechristened the Hesperides Islands as the Daughtry Islands. Further claimed an independent state whose application for membership in the U.S. was actually rejected. Colonel Antonio Baeza, the original compiler of the information, formally requested the Spanish Navy send an expedition to the Daughtrys and seize them, but his request was turned down. Navy said they weren't willing to waste fuel to search an empty patch of ocean. Well, the government of the Daughtry and Hesperides Islands issued postage stamps in Esperanto and drafted a constitution in that same language. Ribera notes that more than a constitution, the document's a formal instrument of occupation of the islands by the Sato Hespero, state of the Hesperides in Esperanto, dated June 15, 1965, and declaring the total occupation of the Daughtry and Hesperides archipelago with the intent to capture, colonize, and establish a presence, and thereby establish a new state to be known as the Confederation of the Daughtry and Hesperides Islands. Signatories on this instrument were a man named Dr. Deniwakara, General Mayer, one Professor Bellavini. And if things weren't strange enough at this point, the Daughtrys had a national anthem called Under the Southern Cross, had a capital in the village of Starpole, and ministries of the Interior, Treasury, and Culture. There were three rectangular postage stamps issued by this non-existent republic that commemorated freedom of religion, space travel, and the rights of mankind. And the stamps are issued in denominations of 50 and 75, even though we don't know what the monetary unit is. Well, at this point, having amassed all this information, Antonio Ribera launched his own investigation. One of his colleagues, the late Andreas Faber-Kaiser, secured highly detailed maps of the South Pacific from NORAD, showing beyond any doubt that there was little there beyond great quantities of salt water at that particular latitude and longitude. Another researcher, Jose Luis Barcelo, managed to connect with the shadowy Madrid-based syndicate and confirmed its existence, but he couldn't confirm a connection to the Daughtrys. Well, having reached a dead end, Ribeiro set his research aside. Well, at this point, a number of rational explanations appear in front of us. Creation of a bogus tax haven for European millionaires and billionaires. Fictional target created for a military exercise. Similar to the non-existent countries used in U.S. Army and Navy war games. Or an intelligence exercise conducted by Spain's CESID for its own inscrutable purposes. Or maybe it was an elaborate fiction similar to our modern role-playing games, but on a much grander scale. On the other hand, could the Phantom Archipelago be a real bone of contention between the great powers of another world that coexist within our own, and from which information and living beings sometimes leak out? Maybe the man from Torrid, who's still locked up in his padded cell in Tokyo, can tell us all we need to know about these islands. The problem is, who's going to ask him? Now, there's been a number of books dealing with the subject of mysterious disappearances written over the past 50 to 75 years. Some of these are concerned with disappearances in our planet's oceans. I point you to the Bermuda Triangle and Japanese Devil Triangle stories. Others deal with human disappearances and geographic features such as Vermont's Mount Glastonbury, Puerto Rico's El Yunque, and Africa's Mount Inyangani. And others also tell stories, mostly apocryphal, of 19th century characters disappearing from street corners and empty fields. If we're willing to admit that humans and animals often do disappear in a way that baffles our best police investigators, we must also be willing to accept the possibility of people appearing out of nowhere under equally baffling circumstances. But in order to narrow the focus of this discussion, the monstrous entities that often appear out of thin air, such as Mothman, Chupacabras, and Bigfoot, just to name a few, would be somewhat excluded. One doesn't even wish to imagine the kind of dimension that they must have come from. Now, these strange citizens from elsewhere, like the man from Torrid, may have no idea that they've somehow entered into a new reality until the subtle terror of being in an unknown circumstances dawns on them. And on the other hand, maybe some of them came here deliberately. In the year 1293, an unknown man who spoke no known language appeared out of the blue during the wedding of King Alexander of Scotland. His apparition, of course, was considered an omen, but nobody recorded what his fate was. More ominous character was supposedly seen by thousands in the year 1125. Once again, he spoke an unknown language and reportedly shot balls of flame powerful enough to set the trees on fire. More recently, author Richard Popkins, who wrote The Second Oswald, mentioned the appearance of an identical double of President Kennedy's assassin who showed up at a public shooting range and fired off a strange weapon that produced balls of flame. Interesting coincidence. In the late 1960s, two enigmatic individuals checked into a Miami hotel for an extended stay and befriended a chambermaid in the process. When the chambermaid asked them where they came from, they said they were from north of the continent, stressing they didn't mean the lands north of the U.S. Now, the chambermaid and her husband detailed the experiences to paranormal researcher Salvador Frixedo. She said one of the men was tall and blonde with a command of many languages and telepathic abilities. His sidekick was short in stature, Asian-looking, and wore an orange-colored uniform. He gave the impression he was actually possibly a bodyguard for the other man. According to the chambermaid, the blonde produced what appeared to be a ball and stuck it to the wall in defiance of gravity. Then he asked the woman to speak to it, which she did, noticing swirling waves of light within the device which would follow her in the air every time she made a move. Well, the chambermaid and her husband witnessed the activities of the tall blonde and his companion on the beach during stormy weather, pointing what appeared to be cameras and other devices at the rough sea. While cleaning their rooms, and should be noted the pair refused to leave their rooms while she cleaned, she noticed a suitcase filled with billiard balls pulsating with light, as if they were filled with electricity. And then one day, the two vanished as mysteriously as they'd appeared. So what did they mean by north of the continent? But due to the curvature of the Earth, it's reasonable to assume they might emit the lands to the north of the Americas. That would be the polar ice pack and maybe Asia. Freaksado supports the view the strange men refer to other dimensional planes of existence accessible through certain materialization-dematerialization points. The decidedly non-tourist activities of this bizarre twosome inevitably leads us to the stories of the notorious Men in Black, whose activities have become a staple of ufology. While Men in Black activities usually attach to UFO sightings and occupant encounters, some instances of Men in Black apparitions are totally unrelated to that particular phenomenon. These cases involve such MIB statements that indicate their provenance as being the nation of the third eye. We find a lot written about that in John Keel's book, Our Haunted Planet, which I found absolutely fascinating. Although Keel attaches an occult meaning to the statement, it could be they make reference to a physical country located, shall we say, elsewhere. A Pittsburgh MIB case examined by researcher Mike Lonzo in 1995 involved an elderly woman who witnessed the fall of a strange black stone into her backyard. Now, that event was followed almost immediately by a visit from a pair of tuxedo-wearing MIBs who demanded the return of the black stone. They claimed the loss of it would bring about the destruction of their universe. Even earlier, in November 1973, a young woman working for an employment agency in San Juan, Puerto Rico, was visited by a man dressed in an immaculate black suit with a shirt that seemed to be woven of a texture unknown on Earth. He had extremely long, tapering fingers and a smooth complexion. The woman found herself mesmerized by his conversation, which ranged from ecology to war, along with the statements such as, there were other worlds than this one. And once we suppress the hair trigger urge to associate the MIBs with UFOs, we see their motives in this case were other than silencing the saucer witnesses. So the question becomes, could the MIBs be able to come and go at will between their world and ours? It will certainly explain cases in which the sudden disappearance of MIB or their shiny black vehicles have been reported. Well, Brad Steiger is a paranormal researcher, written a fair number of books on the subject of out-of-place objects and people, and he has an interesting story with a man supposedly able to enter these other levels of existence at will in a book called Strange Disappearances. A man from Missouri named Al Kaisig wrote the author at length about his experiences with dimensional doorways, or what he called points of access into other realities. Kaisig informed Steiger that one of our neighboring universes is a soundless environment lacking wind or sun, although the sky is bright enough to suggest the existence of one, and he himself entered into it while taking his dog for a walk in Arkansas in December 1965. He said, this silent world seems to mimic our own countryside, down to the wood frame houses that Kaisig said he encountered along his walk. But the silence, lack of animals or humans, was somewhat distressing. There appeared to be a considerable time difference as well between dimensions. The correspondent went on to mention an unnamed region of the Ozarks in which he could clearly see into the other dimension and watch its inhabitants effortlessly coming into our own. Kaisig stated his belief this parallel dimension was the hell on earth where Jesus preached for 3 days before he ascended to heaven. According to Kaisig, other dimensional doorways open into a land of no life. Some take you to the past, some take you to the future. So was he telling a tall tale, having a laugh at Steiger's expense? Was he a complete and total nut job? Or was he somebody who was able to enter and return from these other dimensions? You know, metaphysical anthropology, a contradiction in terms, so to speak, is another bit of New Age claptrap designed to make skeptics' eyeballs ache. Well, according to many thousands of South Americans who've expressed a belief in the theory set forth many decades ago by the late Professor Guillermo Torreira, that's not the case. Torreira was a man who appears to have lived his life in a middle realm between harsh reality and the possibility of other realms of existence to coexist with our own. In his book, El Valle de los Espíritus, he said the enigma has been before us for a long time, and both Hermetic science and metaphysics make reference to cosmic lights or forces manipulated by the higher intelligences which have plowed Earth's skies for millennia.
Must find shelter in subterranean locations or move about in dimensions completely unknown to the ancestral mind of the human species. He suggested the existence of a number of interdimensional and or subterranean realms having a physical double in their prime reality. So Toole in the north could have a double in the Antarctic realm, although not necessarily in this dimension. The all-mentioned Shambhala of Asian tradition would have a physical counterpart in our world. Most important of all these cities is one called Urx, E-R-K-S, located within the Lesser Triangle of Forces. Now, that's a triangle formed by the hills of Calaguala, the village of Cerro Azul, and Cerro Colorado, which are found in Argentina's Cordoba province. Basing himself upon the legends of tribes native to the area, the metaphysicist claims that the regions of Urx may allow certain individuals from our reality to find their way there, after they achieve a higher intellectual capacity, of course. They're so much smarter than we are. City of Urx, whose entrance no man has discovered, according to Rera, features three colossal mirrors constructed from a variety of materials. One of them is made from lapis lazuli, and the others of elements unknown to man. Rera states that reports of a ghastly white light often reported in the hilltops of the region are produced by Urx and its mirrors. And while Urx thrives in its own unassailable dimension, St. Brendan's Isle seems unstable enough to stumble out of its own and enter ours quite often. Since the 1500s, sailors have reportedly seen an island that appears to fade in and out of our reality in the waters of the Canary Islands. Those who've seen it from afar and the few lucky ones who have landed there and managed to leave it have described it as a mountainous, vegetation-covered island featured in a few rivers. This is an eighth island in the Canarian archipelago and has traditionally been identified as St. Brendan's Isle after the medieval Irish monk whose adventures on the high sea first brought him to the place. And while geographers balk at taking the book about St. Brendan's exploits as a reliable authority, it's nonetheless interesting that ancient cartographers such as Ptolemy noted that the Canary Islands had an eighth island, Apositus, which was inaccessible. Now, the book that talks about strange St. Brendan's exploits is the Navigation Sancti Bendani Abatis. So did the Alexandrian astronomer mean it was surrounded by deadly reefs or something a little bit more elusive? 1570, a Spanish governor received sworn statements from over 100 Canarian settlers that had seen St. Brendan's Isle to the north of the island of Herrero. He was able to see the sun setting behind the isle's peaks. Even more compelling was the testimony of a skilled Portuguese navigator who reached the island to restock his ship's water stores. He said there were signs of farm animals and cultivation and evidence of a giant footprint, twice the size of a normal man. Unfortunately, a sudden storm caused the navigator to raise anchor, but after the meteorological phenomena subsided, he couldn't go back to that island again, couldn't find it. Captain of the Spanish fleet allegedly reached St. Brendan's Isle and explored it, but again, a sudden storm and the feeling the island was moving caused him to beat it back to his ship. Now, there may be a little more than charming sea stories, but St. Brendan's Isle will just not go away. Canarian author Jose Gregorio Gonzalez reports that the island was seen by three fishermen in 1936, seen again in August of 1956, and photographed in 1958. Now, Gonzalez is the first to admit St. Brendan's sightings could be an optical illusion, the reflection of the island of La Palma seen under certain optical conditions, but he does raise a caution. He said the other theory leads us to subjects related to other dimensions and parallel universes involving the sudden opening of windows to other worlds of an uncertain nature. For many decades now, the Canary Islands have been identified as one of those special areas in which it's possible to make contact with other dimensions. In 1983, Rosa and Eva Lidon claimed to have seen St. Brendan's Isle rising from the sea. This is one afternoon from their vantage point on Grand Canary. New island occupied a space between the solid islands of Gomera and Herrero and remained visible for over 2 hours. When the women came back and checked the next morning, the island was gone. Researcher Emiliano Bethencourt, who discovered the Giron Pyramid Complex on Grand Canary, interviewed an old man who allegedly saw the interdimensional island in the 50s. He described seeing a great city with enormous buildings whose lights changed color. Well, scientists are beginning to suggest the possibility that such dimensions, believed to be curled up within our own, exist beyond time and space and can be accessed only when the energy is at the very high or low frequencies is aimed at them. In 1921, Theodore Kaluza presented a paper that suggested the existence of a fifth dimension in addition to Einstein's three spatial and temporal dimensions. In the 1980s, John Swartz and Michael Green's superstring theory proposed a universe of 10 dimensions, 6 of which are compacted following the Big Bang. According to researchers, these dimensions are impenetrable and completely unknown to us, but many others and the witnesses to the events and phenomena that I've talked about would certainly beg to differ. You know, we were talking earlier about the fact that folks disappear, never seen again, or sometimes reappear. Well, on one crisp winter morning in 1945, an injured man was delivered to the emergency ward of the U.S. Public Health Service Hospital in Boston. This lonely room became his entire world until destiny claimed him 30 years later. It's February 11th, 1945, 2:20 in the morning. Duty nurse glanced through the glass doors, surprised to see an ambulance moving up the winding snow-covered driveway. Minutes later, the oddly dressed driver wheeled a stretcher into the emergency room and helped the nurse put the patient on the examining table. As he got ready to leave, the driver looked at her and said, "You'll call this man Charles Jameson." And then he left. Now, Jameson was in a bad shape. The nurse postponed the usual paperwork required for admission and alerted the trauma team. Three old physicians arrived and were startled by the condition of this comatose patient. Appeared to be in his mid-40s, bluish-white sores and skin lacerations revealed an acute stage of osteomyelitis, a bone disease. Jameson also suffered a mild stroke. His back and legs were covered with infected shrapnel wounds. His cheek revealed a 2-inch scar that had been stitched by a clear amateur. On the left hand, his index finger had been chopped off below the middle joint. Well, elaborate tattoos on both arms presented crossed American and British flags, interlocked hearts. The words U.S. Navy was seen under the American flag and United was under the English flag. But there was another word that was too faded to read. It could have been kingdom. As the doctors worked on Charles Jameson, they sent the nurse to question the ambulance driver. They couldn't understand why somebody waited so long to bring the man in for treatment. Well, when the nurse got back to the lobby, she discovered the ambulance was gone. Such unethical protocol was unacceptable. Well, the nurse called the police. A few hours later, they got a response to their queries, and they discovered another fact. No ambulance service, public or private, had been sent to the public service hospital in the last 3 days. Completely baffled, the nurse called her supervisor and reported what she had discovered. Supervisor said, "Are you sure it was a private ambulance?" She said, "No, but it would have been marked with a name if it had been a public ambulance. It was bright blue, but there was nothing printed on the sides." And the supervisor said, "What about the driver?" She said, "He was strange, wore a dark blue overcoat, had brass buttons, not like a policeman's, more like a coat worn by an officer on a ship." But detectives from the Boston Police Department tried to learn something about the patient from his clothing. The coat and trousers were foreign and old, but in very good condition. Labels were all intact, but faded beyond recognition. Pockets contained no identification cards, papers, or letters that could shed any light on where Charles Jameson came from. The nation's most prominent agencies used every resource to solve the puzzle of Charles Jameson. Fingerprints were sent to each branch of the armed forces, the merchant marines, and the FBI. All agencies reported negative results. Police questioned scores of ambulance drivers, but the duty nurse who had admitted Jameson couldn't identify any of them. And no ambulance driver in the Boston area drove the type of vehicle to deliver Jameson to the hospital. So, 1 month after Jameson's perplexing admission, the doctors believed he would survive. Although he was paralyzed from the waist down, his wounds were healing and he'd actually come out of his coma. But he was mute, and the mute state confused the experts. They couldn't determine if his silence was caused by a stroke or by a psychological trauma. Well, he's classified as a John Doe because his name couldn't be verified. July 15th, 1945, officials ended the exhaustive investigation without discovering a single clue about their subject's past. Based on his clothing and tattoos, it was assumed he'd been a sailor. In reality, it looked like he was a man that was never born. As weeks turned to months, all attempts to communicate with him were futile. He sat in his wheelchair, staring out the window at the Boston suburb of Brighton. Well, one summer afternoon, a nurse making her rounds looked in on him and saw a scene that had rarely changed. It was as much a fixture as the walls and furniture and room that was now his prison. Occasionally, he smiled as though some pleasant memory escaped from the mystery region of his mind. As the nurse was leaving, he turned his wheelchair away from the window and said, "I simply do not know." Those five words, spoken with a crisp British accent, were the first he had spoken in more than 2 years. The astonished nurse ran down the hall to the duty station. Even while announcing a remarkable change in Jameson's behavior, she wondered if she had actually heard him speak or just imagined it. Well, moments later, Dr. Oliver Williams went to Jameson's room. He was the hospital's director, but his interest in the quiet patient went beyond medicine. He was also a nautical scholar. He decided to become Jameson's personal physician and spent a lot of hours with his new patient. An expiring plateau had been reached when Jameson broke his silence, and he didn't know how long the patient would remain responsive. So he got his staff together for a meeting and said, "This may be our last chance to make contact with this man." Somehow, in some ways, become receptive to questioning. Well, he began his examination with a series of questions designed to explore Jameson's subconscious in an attempt to get to his past. Whenever Jameson answered a question, Williams would pursue the subject until Jamie could recall no additional details. During one session, Williams felt a chill while this patient described historical events. Jameson began to talk about William Gladstone, who died in 1898, and Benjamin Disraeli, who died in 1881, as if those two great English statesmen were still alive. And next he sat enthralled as Jameson explained the various campaigns of Napoleon, who died in 1821. During the next meeting, Jameson remained silent, so Williams decided to try another plan to determine his patient's background. He asked him what time he sailed. He said, "We cleared the harbor and moved south by southeast. It must have been after midnight by your time." Single fact had been clearly established. He was a sailor. Back in his office, Williams called Alton Barker, chief of the British Information Service, asked Barker to prepare some difficult questions about English ships and customs. Questions in hand, he sat down across from Jameson, who ignored his guest and gazed out the window. Instead of asking questions, Barker began rambling as if he was an old salt spinning tales to a small boy. Jameson just sat and stared. Well, we're going to talk more about this mysterious man in our next show. But for now, let us say that quite often, while we can disappear into another dimension, sometimes they appear here and they're no more in control of things than we are. Until tomorrow at this time, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.